Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Oh, Miles here.
Owlpost is freshly delivered for you this week. I am just one of your hosts here, Matthew Rushing, and with me, as she is always, the effervescent, ever-wonderful Drea Kaufman.
Hello, everyone.
How are you?
I'm doing well. Today was a dental appointment, which I don't think anyone goes, woohoo, I went to the dentist. So yeah. Other than that, pretty good.
Can I make a confession to all the dentists out there? I don't remember the last time I was at the dentist, honestly. Yeah, there's like a million dentist voices cried out in sudden horror, and then we're suddenly silenced. It's like Star Wars. Know. So,
You just broke the hearts of many of our dental listeners.
I really did. I'm sorry, guys, and gals, and people in general. I mean, you know, who knows? Maybe there's some like house elf dentists that I'm offending right now. I apologize. But, you know, if you would like to find us online and complain on how speciest I am, you can find us on Twitter at @JoinNerdParty. You can also find us on Facebook, facebook.com/TheNerdParty. Great places to interact with us, especially when we share the shows, to tell us what you thought about the episode and everything you're thinking about it. You can find us on TheNerdParty.com. And if you go over to TheNerdParty.com/contact, you can choose a show, choose Owlpost, and that email will come to Drea and I, so it's a good way to get in touch with us. And, of course, you can find us on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts, which is really a great way to be able to help the show out, is by going over an Apple Podcast and giving a star rating review. Now, I know what you're thinking. Like, what if I'm an Android user? Well, a majority of the listeners, when I look at the numbers, they actually come from the Apple Podcast system. So it is really an important way to help listeners find us. Gosh, wherever you get your podcast, though, if you give us a review, that's great. But if you go over to Apple Podcasts, we do keep track of those. And we also mention anyone who gives us a review on the show. So just really want to say thank you to everybody who's done that already. The show has been growing really by leaps and bounds since we started. So I just want to say a huge thank you to everybody who has done that. Now, Drea, we are so close to being done with the Chamber of Secrets. And strangely enough, we're at the chapter called
Chamber of Secrets.
Yes.
I know. I actually got a little confused because when you're reading the paper copy, it usually tells you like the chapter number on one side and the chapter name on the other at the very top. And then we got to the Chamber of Secrets and now it says I was like, wait, it says the book name. I got kind of lost. I got a little lost there. We made it work, but there was definitely a moment. It's like a pregnancy moment where I was like, wait, I feel like I'm going crazy. It wasn't just me. It's the name of the chapter.
Well, I don't know. I mean, it could have also been, I mean, Ron and Harry in this chapter are going crazy because they're trying to find a way to sneak into a girl's bathroom without getting caught. And They can't seem to find a way to do that. And I just was like cracking up inside as they were talking about their troubles of trying to sneak into the girl's bathroom. Not for the reasons that boys usually want to sneak into the girls' bathroom. Their motives are completely altruistic.
Yes, they're not trying to be creeps. They're literally trying to save the school. Yeah. And they just want to talk to Moaning Myrtle because they want to save the school and have nobody else get attacked.
Exactly. And while that's happening and while they're trying to figure out a way to get into the women's bathroom, or excuse me, the girls' bathroom, they also find out some really bad news. And that even though the school is basically under attack, they're still going to have school exams at the end of the year.
I know. Isn't that terrible? I'm so sorry you all have been horrifically, like, traumatized for the entire year, but you're still going to have tests. So,
better study for those finals.
Yeah. I like how Ron was more disturbed by that than he was by the Chamber of Secrets.
Well, and I mean, if you're in McGonagall's class, you're using your wand a lot, and Ron is very worried. He even mentions to Harry, holds up his wand, he's like, can you imagine taking a test with this wand? You know, so I understand why he feels that way. So
yes.
I do like a few days before the exam that McGonagall's like, I've got good news for everyone. And they all have different ideas of what the news is like. Dumbledore's back. You got the heir of Slytherin? Oliver Wood's like, Quidditch is back on.
I know, that was my favorite one. I was like, oh, Oliver.
I just love that. But apparently it's that, and this is very good news, that the Mandrakes are almost completely ready to be chopped up and stewed and turned into the brew so they can unpetrify everybody who's been petrified. I guess de-petrify might be the correct term. And
maybe.
Yeah, then they hopefully will get the answers to who attacked them.
And I mean, I feel like everyone's like, yeah, I guess that's the good news, but it's not really what I want to hear. Like, everyone was like, I should be happy about this, but I'm not.
Yeah, especially Oliver Wood, probably. He's definitely not happy about that. And it's kind of interesting, too, because this chapter has a lot packed into, honestly, a short amount of time. And after that happens, Ginny kind of comes up to Ron and Harry and really wants to tell them something really important. And, of course, before she can spill it, Percy ruins it all.
I know. I was so angry at Percy. I was like, walk away, son.
I mean, you know, you'd be disappointed in your older brother, too. And I just thought it was so funny that Ron's like, she was just about to tell us something important.
I know. Ah, damn it, Percy.
Well, and it's also funny because Percy's like, well, I mean, you know, Ginny saw me something I shouldn't be doing the other day, and so I'd rather not talk about it. And it, like, leaves it really awkward because what in the world did Ginny catch you doing that you're not supposed to be doing that you told her not to tell anybody about? Like, it just, it's super awkward until we find out at the very end of the, and legitimately the very end of the book, what this whole thing is about.
And then you're like, it's not even that big of a deal. But we'll get to that.
Yeah, no, it's absolutely not. It's not, I don't understand what he's hiding, why he's hiding. It's very strange, so.
But it was important enough to interrupt Ginny, which is frustrating. Mm-hmm. So, you know, whatever. Thanks for that.
It was also fun that, you know, the boys are being, you know, led from one class to the next because the teachers have to be with them, and Lockhart is the one who's leading them, and he's just being such a d-bag talking about how, mark my words, it was Hagrid, that's the first thing that's going to be out of those petrified people's mouths. And man, if you didn't want to punch Lockhart before, you totally want to punch him now.
Well, but it worked to their advantage, you know, and it was really smart of Harry to kind of catch that and be like, oh, yeah, no, you're right. And Ron just looks at him like he's crazy, but, you know, he knew what he was doing. You know, he knew what he was able to achieve, and I thought that was pretty brilliant.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it's something that is going to come into play the very next chapter when we meet a new character we haven't met before.
Mm-hmm.
In the flesh, sort of, kind of. Anyway,
we're gonna meet a character we have met before,
but
have not
differently
met in person. Yes,
so
we've interacted with, but not met.
Yes, and it is going to raise some questions. But the way in which Harry is able to flatter Lockhart here is very important because they tell him, "Oh, you don't have to keep like walking us as a class. I mean, we're almost there. We can, you know, you have better things to do than this."
You're right. The security is just there's no reason for it.
Oh, and they just play right into him. And so they get away from him. And I love Ron. Ron has the best lines in this book. He's like, prepare for class. Gone to curl his hair more like it.
Yeah, that's pretty good. I like that one.
Oh my gosh. And they think they're so smart, and they, I imagine that if this part had been in the movie, they would have, like, turned around and, like, run into McGonagall, because that's almost exactly what happens.
I wish this part had been in the movie. I think this is the part in the book where we really get to see how a lot of the things in the movie are able to happen. Like, in the movie, they don't kind of depict the super strict level of security that's going on in Hogwarts, so they don't really need to address that. But, you know, it does kind of address like what and why they chose to share things with McGonagall, and like what happens when Dumbledore. I don't think Dumbledore leaves during the movie. I think he's still just there. I can't really remember now. It's on my list to watch tonight. So we'll see. But yeah, I mean, it still would make so much sense. Like, just the logistics are what I was kind of missing from the book. Like, how they get back to Moaning Myrtle. Because in the movie, they literally go from Aragog to Moaning Myrtle. Like, there's nothing in between there. You find Ginny's missing during that. But, like, it's just much more streamlined. And I kind of missed the realism that the book brings to it and how these things actually happened and how it took more than, like, you know, a transitional scene in a movie to get to the end of this. It seems much faster in the movie. And this takes, you know, a couple weeks, if not a month,
yes,
in the book. So,
yes. No, I
am. Same with them all being petrified. They're petrified much longer in the book than they are in the movie.
Yes, they are. And I absolutely agree with you. I think that, again, this is one of the places where the book is just so superior to the movie. And even though I would say that The Chamber of Secrets is probably the most faithful movie to its source material, I mean, it does a really good job of trying to fit in as much as possible. This still adds all of, like you said, I think the nuance that's so important. And what's also great, too, is I love all these little scenes because you're seeing some of those connections that are going to be important throughout the end of this book and throughout the rest of the series. And Harry's quick thinking here is like, we're on the way to see Hermione. You know, we haven't seen her in a while. We felt bad. And McGonagall just totally buys it.
And it shows that human side to her, too, that, yes, this is taking a toll on the teachers and everything. You know, you're getting an effect. Like, this is taking a toll on the prefects, which is why, even though Percy was kind of being a jerk face at the beginning of this, you know, he looked exhausted and just wanted to sit down and eat breakfast because they've been patrolling as well. And, like, all of these other things that are this is wearing on the castle and everyone in it, versus in the book where you're just like, oh, it's kind of scary. Or in the movie, you're like, oh, this is kind of scary. In the book, you're like, this is really intensely wearing on everybody. and you can tell.
Well, and what's so great here, too, is that, you know, in the movie, when they go to visit Hermione, it just seems like something that they're doing because they're not sure what to do next. And here it becomes a thing where they're like, oh, well, I guess we got to go see Hermione now, because if we don't go, we're going to definitely get in trouble and somebody will know we weren't where we're supposed to be. And so they go to visit her. And this is the moment that Harry discovers that clenched in Hermione's fist is something very important. And it happens to be a piece of paper ripped out of a book, which I was like, Hermione ruined a book?
Yeah, I know. It's shocking. I can't believe she did it either.
I was so disappointed. But what she's removed from the book is a whole page on something that we have not met yet, and that is the basilisk, which is, mm-hmm, the king of serpents, and it's a snake of a gigantic size. It can live for hundreds of years. Strangely enough, spiders are scared of it. And one of the ways that it can die is from the crowing of a rooster.
I thought that was very strange. It also makes me want to start crowing like a rooster on a regular basis, just in case.
Wait, you have a basilisk living in your pipes?
You never know. Okay.
I mean, your pipes must be ginormous for a basilisk to live in. Them.
Maybe it's like a little baby basilisk. It's baby like a basilisk in training.
That sounds so awful. Baby basilisk.
It does. It sounds like my worst nightmare, guys. Maybe I'm just paranoid that there could be a basilisk around any corner, that I should start carrying a mirror and crowing like a rooster,
yes,
at all times.
Wow.
I feel like I need to do this.
Wow, your husband's like, what the heck is wrong with you? I was trying to sleep. No.
He'll probably figure it out. He'll either be like, this pregnancy's made you incredibly crazy, or you're worried about basilisks. And
well,
he'll be,
I mean,
like, it's both.
Yeah. And why can't it be both?
They're not mutually exclusive.
No, absolutely not. You know, I hear pregnancy is a terror on the body and the mind. So,
living proof right
there,
here, guys.
You go. There you go. Absolutely, folks. You've heard it here. So what's so interesting, too, is that not only do we have an understanding then of why the roosters died at the beginning and why the spiders have been fleeing, but Hermione has written a note that just says pipes. And it's so great because this is where Harry's brain, and I think it's so interesting to watch him all of a sudden that, like, whoosh, all the pieces come together for him. He's able to put it all together. And it's interesting that even though Hermione is not here, she's still here. And the Trinity is working like the Trinity, even though Hermione is petrified. And so Harry's able to piece together, you know, the basilisk. This is how it's been moving around. And he figures out why nobody's actually died, why everybody's been petrified, because they haven't actually been looking it in the eye. They've always been seeing it in some reflection somehow, even Mrs. Norris. And I love the way that Harry's brain is actually able to piece all that together with just the bit of information that Hermione's provided. And I think what it does is it helps show how smart Harry is, just in a slightly different way than Hermione.
And that they really complement each other, because as soon as he gave her just a piece, it all came together for her. And, you know, that's what she needed. She needed him to put it all together, and she, you know, and he needed her to sort of trigger that. And then they needed Ron to be there and be brave and take care of a lot of the other stuff that they forget about while they're, you know, brainstorming their ideas. You know, he's like, wait, people are watching.
Well, and this is a cool thing, too, because Ron is the one who's like, but what if the bathroom? What if it's Myrtle's bathroom that's the entrance to the Chamber of Secrets? And so, again, it's a beautiful thing of, like, you know, Hermione, again, she's petrified. But they're all working together to solve this mystery. And what's really cool here is that they immediately think, we need to go straight to McGonagall. That's their first thought. Like, the kids finally are like, we got to go talk to an adult.
Right. And I like that. I like that they were, as an adult, I'm like, oh, it's kind of nice that they're like, yes, we need to talk to an adult.
Well, and they go to the teacher's lounge, which I would have loved to have seen what the teacher's lounge looks like at Hogwarts. And then they hear this announcement, McGonagall telling all the students to return to their dormitories at once and that the staff should immediately return to the staff room. And so the boys are like, oh, crap. So they hide in this big wardrobe and they end up hearing some really bad news.
Yeah, they get some really terrible news that Ginny has been, well, they get really terrible news that someone has been taken down into the chamber to be killed. And while everyone's freaking out about who, like, about there being someone, they find out it's actually Ginny. And that makes it worse for them.
And then McGonagall does something brilliant. She tricks Gilderoy Lockhart into going to search for the Chamber of Secrets. And her whole reason for doing that is because the moment he leaves the office finally, I'll go get to that. Get ready. She's like, oh, finally got him out from under our feet. Now this is what we do.
Yes. I like how she's like, oh, well, you said you'd take care of it. You said this was no problem. Why don't you just take care of it? Like, you should take care of it. And he's like, okay. And then they leave. And she's like, oh, thank God. Let's move on.
Well, the fact that they call his bluff like that, and it's McGonagall, I love her no-nonsense, you know? And there's so much in this chapter, and I think throughout the end of the book, where I'm really reminded of how much McGonagall reminds me of Hermione. Like, they're so similar. Yeah. And I just think that's kind of beautiful.
Well, and she's hilariously brilliant, and you just gotta give her nods, like, for being like, oh, yes, no, I'll appease to your need to be right and handle everything. So I'm gonna let you do that. And secretly, I know you're not going to. So you take care of yourself, and I'm gonna go take care of everything else, because we know that I really am the one who gets the you know, stuff done here. So
yeah.
smile through the crap and move on.
No, oh no. She gets the S done. You know what I'm saying?
She does.
So, and I really like Harry. He's like, I think we should go talk to Lockhart. And Ron's like, why?
Like, I love that it takes Ron a minute to catch up and figure out what's happening. And then he's like, oh, yep, nope, I'm there with you. Yep, we're on the same page now. We got this.
Which, you know, I love the conversation that they have with Lockhart, because this is where he unmasks himself as the fraud that we've known he is, that we, the reader, have known he is the whole time.
This is the only part to me that was a little strange. Like, there was really no reason for Lockhart to tell them this. Like, it needed to come out at some point. We needed to hear about it. But it was just a little forced. Like, it didn't quite maybe flow as much as she wanted it to. Like, she needed to fit it in somewhere. This was the best place to put it, but maybe it wasn't, like, the best way to do it. So, yeah, you know, it's maybe just the part that didn't sit quite as well for me as maybe it does for others. Or maybe she wanted it. She's still a very pretty new writer at this point, this being only her second book of all time. So, you know, that to me was just one of those things where, like, she had this whole story contrived and then she ends up with this piece and she's like, I don't know what to do with it. I have to put it somewhere. And it's like a puzzle where you have this piece and you're like, it has to go somewhere, but it doesn't really fit anywhere. So where can I kind of make it fit that's the least intrusive of all the places? It's sort of what it felt like to me. So I'm glad I got the information, but I don't really think that it made a lot of sense to me.
I would say that I would agree with you if it wasn't clear that Lockhart is just planning on memory charming them so they won't remember.
But then why tell them? Why tell them at all?
Because why say anything at all? I think it's part of the compulsion that Lockhart has that he can't let go of the one thing he actually is brilliant at. You know, this is another place where he can actually brag about himself, and it's true. He's really good at memory charms. So, yeah. You know, I mean, when you have this person who can't stop talking about themselves, it makes sense to me that they want a monologue about themselves. Even when it's revealing that part of what you already knew really wasn't true about them is not true because of something else you didn't know about them. So it works enough for me. I can understand what you're saying, though. But I do love, too, that Harry immediately is able to take his wand away. And now Lockhart's just pretty much their stooge to do stuff with for the rest of the chapter, you know? It's great.
Yeah, that's true. I agree with that. And I like his disarming of him. Made me smile. I like that the comment after that was like, shouldn't have let Snape teach us that one. Like, I was like, I kind of wish Snape was like listening so he could hear.
The boys have fun getting to be a little bit cocky in places here. And that's definitely that boy, like, yeah, you probably shouldn't have taught us that one, right? You know, it's really a 12-year-old boy thing to say that. It just is. So, and what I think is really interesting, too, is the fact that, you know, when they make their way to Myrtle's bathroom, they ask her a question that nobody else has asked her before, which I thought was kind of fascinating.
Yeah, I like it's interesting because the way it's described is that she's almost like flattered that they ask. You know what I mean? She's like, oh, yeah, I'll tell you that. Like, that was the first time she like wanted to just openly share about what happened. Like, you can ask her about most other things, you can talk about this or that, but this was like the first time you'd had a conversation with her that wasn't like riddled with kind of a creepy, she's trying to scare people away edge.
You know, and I think what's so interesting about that, and it's something that in a couple chapters we will see, I think she's developed a little crush on Harry. And you have to remember too, she's also she's still the same age she was when she died, so she's still a teenage girl, you know? And I think that's the thing that kind of gets a little bit lost in the movie, because she's played by somebody, and I think maybe we all instinctively know she's so much older. And
we've talked about it before, too, that she's like 40 or something.
And I think that strangely kind of changes things.
It comes off really creepy in the movie. It comes out like Myrtle's kind of a creepy person and not just a ghost who died. Like, yeah, I don't think it quite trans. I think that was maybe not the best casting. Not a great casting.
Yeah, it does really. I mean, she does the role well, and she's creepy and everything, and I think that's great. But it is kind of strange when you in the film. It just is a strange thing because of who they
it's
have
not,
playing her.
It's not the same as no. what's in the book. In no. the book, she's creepy because she's trying to distance people from her, right? Because she's been hurt and bullied, and that she's creepy in that sense. She's creepy in the Aubrey Plaza in Parks and Rec sense,
yes.
right?
That's
but in the movie. In the movie, she's more creepy in the, like, I don't know, in almost like a, it's almost got like a little bit of a sexual thing to it, especially in the
yeah.
fourth movie. And the age of the actress, like, makes you feel a little creepier too. And like,
oh, a lot more creepy. Like, not just so a little creepy, like, but a lot more creepy.
Yeah. It doesn't like quite work.
No.
It just doesn't
anyway.
Quite work.
Okay. Yeah. But I really like that she, because we could keep talking about that a long time. And
how creepy she is,
yeah,
for all eternity.
Yeah.
Literally.
But I really like the way in which, I think what's interesting is the boys are trying to get information from Myrtle. But at the same time, there is this sense too, and it always is from Harry, that he actually cares about people that other people don't care about. And when he asks her the question, I do think that she senses that he doesn't just want to know the story, like he cares, because because in a lot of ways Harry has pieced together how this happened. He doesn't know who it was that did her, but he does know how she died, really. And I think there's a sense of pity that he has when he asks her the question, and I always imagine him saying it as like, to ask how you died, you know, just that it has that sense of like, I'm so sorry this happened. I kind of know what it is, but I need to make sure I'm right.
And I think whenever you have Harry, because this will come up again and again, where Harry has to sort of address people who are difficult or have trust issues, or, you know, people have written off before. He always, I think, comes to it with such a sense of genuine and authenticity to him that they can't not trust him. Like, they just instinctually want to help him. He builds a loyalty among all of the witches and wizards. And, you know, like, he's very bipolaring, similar to what, you know, Lord Voldemort has, and that he can kind of charm people, but he does it with a sense of for the greater good versus, you know, Voldemort, who's doing it for the quote unquote greater good. So I think they can sense that. I think people can sense that about you and about Harry whenever you kind of say something. So it really speaks to him coming to the table with complete good intentions and honesty when he has these conversations. And I think over time, Myrtle's seen that. You know, yeah, they were making Polyjuice Potion, but she was there to find out why and what they wanted to do. And you know, and Myrtle the whole time has known that they've been trying to figure out what's going on and stop it. And so from her own experience, she wants to help him.
Yeah, and I think that the thing that makes them different, and Harry is specifically different than somebody like Voldemort, or he who must not be named.
Yeah, I'm not afraid of no ghost.
Is the fact that he's genuine. So I think that's the main difference. And it's really interesting to watch them find out the story, and they find out that it's behind this, that the entrance is behind this sink that's never worked. And Harry has to, for the first time in his life, actually try to speak Parseltongue. And he doesn't get it for the first couple of times, and then finally does. And I thought that was really kind of a humorous scene, and a scene that's full of like tension at this point.
I really liked how he says it. And because we don't know, right? Like, we're reading this book, and if he says something in Parseltongue, so far it's still been in English for us. So like how he says it, and then Ron looks at him and he's like, English. He was like, dang it.
Yeah,
try again.
That was really funny.
That was pretty funny.
It's also interesting because, you know, they push Lockhart down first. They use him as their guinea pig, and they get down there and they're having a conversation, Ron and Harry, and they're seeing this giant snake skin, and they're talking about which way they go, and Lockhart is able to grab Ron's wand, And yells Obliviate and blows up that part of the tunnel, but also not such a good result for Lockhart.
I really like that he has not been paying attention this entire year. Because his wand has been broken the entire year. So
it really makes me wonder, how in the world did he learn anything all year? Like, if his wand is broken, like, did he like borrow Harry's so that he could, you know, like,
I don't know.
What in the world?
I don't know. It had to be something like that. Or a lot of things, you know, were not powerful enough to matter, or they were still doing enough things that didn't require a lot of your wand. I don't know.
What I love, too, is that he's knocked himself out. And at this point, this is where Ron is on one side of a bunch of rock and Harry's on the other. And Harry's like, okay, I'm going to go after Ginny. If you don't hear from me in an hour, get out of here. And
in the movie, we get a lot more details mm-hmm. at this point of what's going on.
Right.
But in the book, she just kind of leaves it as they're separated and he's moving on.
Yeah. Which I think it actually does better for the tension.
It does. It works better because you don't, you know, Ron says he's okay, but that's about all you know.
Yeah. And that's where we leave it. And we have to wait till next week to see what happens next. But I mean, one of the things that she does in these books, I think, is so cool. Is the way that she ratchets everything up, and then at the right time, everything spills out. And it's just like, it's almost like there's this sense that there's plot vomit. Like, everything that's been a piece of the puzzle all of a sudden just like starts falling into place really quickly. And you're like, oh, that's what, you know, like, and it's great. And that's one of the things that makes this chapter so fun, is so many of the puzzle pieces have fallen into place. And now we're ready to dive into chapter 17. And I can't wait, Treya. I can't wait.
I can't either. This is that point where you want to keep reading and it's really hard to stop and not keep reading.
Don't stop reading.
Yeah, exactly, like that.
Yeah,
just listen to Journey and your life will be okay.
Yeah, absolutely. So Drea, if anybody wants to talk to you about Harry Potter or anything else, or about how they can't wait till next week, where can they find you on the interwebs?
Sure. If you want to send me a picture of you looking for basilisks around your house, or see how my hunt is going and how my rooster noises are coming along, you can find me on Twitter at PCFcheck or on Instagram at Drea Kaufman, and it's COFFMAN.
And you can find me on the Acromantula webs over on Twitter at MattRushing02. I'm also on Instagram under the same name. You can find me here on the network doing Aggressive Negotiations with John Mills, where we talk about Star Wars. I love doing that show, and I hope you'll check it out. It's so much fun as we just kind of pick interesting topics, something we've been thinking about in Star Wars, and talk about it just like two fans talk about it, you know, over, you know, a beer, or milkshake, burger, something like that. You know, whatever it is that you like to talk about. Geeky stuff with your friends over. And you can find me on the Trek FM network doing a few shows. I do The Orb with Chris Jones talking about Deep Space Nine. You can also find me on the 602 Club, which is the general geek show, and we talk about all the fandoms we love. So like Harry Potter, Star Wars, you know, anything you can think of, we're trying to talk about over there. So that's it's worth your time. And then I have one more show, and that is called Cinema Stories, and we are talking about film through a specific lens of faith. And I hope you will check all of those out. You can find them on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. And we want to say thank you so much for checking your Owlpost.
Mischief managed.
Join the revolution. Join the Nerd Party.